Welcome, my friends. I'm Dave Champion. This is my co-host, Bill Garnes, and together we are totally unprepared. Well, what would you like to talk about today?
Numbskulls. Specifically, political numbskulls.
Oh, okay. This I got to hear.
Now, keep in mind, we are both highly conservative-minded, liberty type of guys.
Yeah. Right?
But liberty is for everyone.
Correct.
Not just those people that you think should have it, and not against the people that you think should not have it.
Right.
So, a senator I tend to like quite a bit, Mike Lee, out of Utah.
I've heard the name, yeah.
He's the junior senator. Orrin Hatch, who's been there way too long, is the senior senator there. He's introduced some new bill.
Is Lee Mormon?
I would imagine he is.
Okay. I just know Orrin Hatch is.
Yeah, I would imagine he is.
Okay.
But I didn't check his card. Papers, please.
Yeah.
He introduced a new piece of legislation he wants Congress to pass that would protect individuals' religious right to discriminate against gays. That's what it is. So I see this on his Facebook page today, to which I responded immediately, something along the lines of, would you protect the rights of business owners whose religious stance or philosophical stance said that they could not help to benefit returning warriors from the theater of war to do anything because their religion or their philosophy, their beliefs stood against that, and they sold medical devices such as prosthetic limbs.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a lot of veterans out there that are doing arms and legs with prosthetic limbs. But if I'm in that business and let's say that I believe that you shouldn't be getting any of these sort of benefits because
deeply held religious conviction.
Yes, and that deeply held religious conviction might be something that, say, I am Jehovah's Witness.
Yeah.
Which, you know, don't believe in war, I think. So, because what he's doing, and I articulated this in my post, what he's doing is allowing for this same sort of discrimination to be used against anyone, by anyone, to hide behind their beliefs. Do you actually have to be a member of an organized religion to enjoy the discriminatory benefits of this law that would go through? I kind of doubt it. You could just say, well, my beliefs prevent me from selling the wares necessary for a man with visible tattoos to be able to, because my beliefs stand against visible tattoos. So, Dave, you're going to have to go down the street and talk to somebody else.
Right, because, you know, Paul said you're not to, what was his phrase, something the temple. I forget the exact adjective, basically like degrade the temple, right? And that's one of the two, speaking of tattoos, one of the two verses in the Bible that idiots use when they want to say something against tattoos. And none of them, you know, and first of all, it's like my expression is, if this is your temple, decorate that bitch, right? So,
well, and you see, for me, I don't have any tattoos. Yeah. You know, you don't see bumper stickers on a Ferrari.
No. but here, you know, I have a stock answer for that. They also don't sell it in the brushed aluminum that comes off the production line. They put some sexy red, some sexy yellow right here, right? Okay. So, but this type of legislation makes me nuts. And here's where it stands the possibility of going. Okay? And that is, for instance, a gal takes a box of books to the post office. And she puts the box up there and she starts taking the individually packaged books and she says, I need to ship these. And he says, oh, you're shipping some books. Great. What are they about? You know, well, it's about the Jewish faith. I'm Jewish and these are going to some of the people in our temple. And I'm sorry, ma'am. You people killed my savior. My deeply held religious beliefs prevent me from allowing me to ship these books for you.
Well, interesting enough, imagine if she was just shipping a copy of the Old Testament. Because the Old Testament, that's the book of the Jews. The New Testament, that's the book of the Christians.
Right.
Add the Book of Mormon and we go on from there. But yeah, you can imagine, well, I'll send your Old Testament if you put the New Testament in there too.
Yeah.
Yeah. So imagine this unbelievable can of worms. So I finished by asking our dear Senator Mike Lee of Utah if he actually thought that this piece of legislation could pass Congress and make a positive difference in the world, or if it was merely a marketing stunt. And, of course, we know the answer to that.
Yeah.
It's to garnish the conservative group. He's probably up for re-election this year. I don't know. I didn't check. I don't live in Utah. But he's done some good stuff, so I don't want to completely slam him. But in this area, he's dead wrong.
Yeah. You know, in the erstwhile Dave Champion show, I talked about this a bit. And I see it like this. You had people who could not stop discriminating against black people. How did that get it resolve itself? Statutes were passed to make it a violation of law to discriminate against black people. And the people who wanted to discriminate screamed, "You're violating my constitutional rights!" Right? That's what they screamed if you go back 50 years ago.
Sure.
Right? We had people who could not stop discriminating against women. What was the net outcome? There's a statute. You can't do that now, right? And they screamed again, "Oh, my rights!" And then age discrimination, that became very big as in the corporate world, okay? If somebody applied for a job and he was 47 and he was by far the most qualified applicant, he wasn't getting the job because he was 47 and they wanted to hire somebody who was 27, okay? What was the net outcome of that? There's now a statute, right? And again, they cried that it was violating their rights. And I look at this history, and all of these cases are nothing but bigotry. Okay? And I look at this, and I'm like, when it comes to, for instance, what you're talking about with allowing people to discriminate under the facade, the contrived argument of their religious freedom, it's like, okay, so now you're trying to create a justification, which is never going to fly, to be a discriminatory ass bite, okay? So it's like, how do you think that's going to end now? Given the history, the incremental history, if you want to keep discriminating, how do you think this is going to end?
Here's yet another aspect of this, Dave. People want to have privacy, their own personal privacy.
Yeah.
And a lot of these people screaming about wanting to discriminate against gays in a completely different setting want their own privacy. All right, well, let's not entirely separate these. It is their decision or whatever in their private life, what they do in the privacy of their own home, with whom they do it and how they get it done.
Right.
Is none of your business or their business or my business or anybody else's business. But because of that private part of their life, I want to discriminate you.
Yeah.
And the thing is, how in some areas, oftentimes, I mean, there's enough people out in society who are gay that you don't know that they are because they don't necessarily wear it as a badge of honor or wear their rainbow hat or bracelet or whatever they might do.
I'm going to say that's the lion's share of homosexuals. You to look at them or converse with them, you would never know their sexual orientation.
Okay, so then does this open up the door to, look, we don't serve as gay, so you're going to have to fill out this form or answer my questions before I'll allow you to do business in my place. Which, here's the interesting thing. If you end up with businesses that openly want to discriminate, I think it's good for everybody to know. So for those of you who aren't necessarily the ones being discriminated against, but you don't support that part of discrimination, don't do any business there. I recently read there's a restaurant in Virginia that has asked uniformed service members to leave. They don't want to serve service members, military members, in uniform at their restaurant. They're repeatedly asking them to leave. Something tells me that restaurant's days are numbered short order.
Especially in Virginia, of all places.
Yeah.
You know, with the proliferation of military bases around and its proximity to D.C., I don't see that.
So this opens a form of discrimination.
Yeah.
What you're wearing, who you represent.
Well, can I give you a parallel?
Sure.
Okay. You and I have talked about this before. Anti-gunners. Okay.
Have we talked about anti-gunners before?
Once or twice. A person can walk into a restaurant open carrying on their hip, and the anti-gunner will spend the next hour in the restaurant griping and bitching to whoever they're dining with about how horrible it is and they shouldn't allow this and it's intimidating. But they'll sit there the whole hour, right? You know, claiming that this guy could go nuts any second and kill us all. But they'll still sit there and gripe for an hour and enjoy their meal. However, if there were 30 people in the restaurant with concealed weapons, 30 times the danger by that person's standards, right? But since the shirt or jacket is covering them, they're happy as a lark and eating their meal. It's like ignorance is bliss, right?
Yeah.
Well, it sort of goes to the same thing when you were talking about being able to recognize homosexuals versus not being able to recognize homosexuals.
Oh, so concealed carry homosexuality.
Well, no. My point is, do you know what a lipstick lesbian is?
Yes.
Okay. For the audience, lipstick lesbian is a woman who is very feminine, and probably a lot of guys would say, wow, she's hot, but she prefers women. Okay. So if a lipstick lesbian walked into, say, a dry cleaner's.
I actually first heard that term once on MTV years ago.
That's
not that I watch MTV, but
yeah,
my daughter
whatever,
was
dude,
home
sure.
and had MTV on. So
it's okay, Bill. So if a lipstick lesbian walked in, the bigot would not know and would do business ordinarily, but then in comes, I think, what is typically sometimes called a bull dyke. And all of a sudden, the store owner recognizes that this person clearly is telegraphing by, you know, haircut and size and clothing and the wallet on the chain and all of it, you know, that well, this person's a lesbian. So I don't want to do business with this person. I have my deeply held religious
beliefs. Let me finish with this honey over here.
Right. Who's also a lesbian.
Before I kick you out.
And that just shows the stupidity of even trying to.
Which gets to what? Profiling. Which profiling is not necessarily a bad thing unless it is intended for discriminatory acts. That's why profiling has become the latest dirty word over the last 5, 6, 7, 8 years. Profiling is the dirty word that you can't do if you're using it for the purposes of discriminating.
I see profiling like a weapon.
Which
you can
is
use
exactly
it for
this
legitimate
law is for.
Purposes and you can use it for nefarious purposes.
Which is exactly what this law is looking to protect, is that
nefarious.
Gay profiling.
Yeah.
We'll be back.
Oh, wait.
Totally unprepared.
We are back, and it's time for
let me finish this fix.
Oh! Wait a second. Okay. All right. Back to what we were trying to do. There I was sitting there getting my thoughts together and the camera's on. Okay.
Oops.
So what is up with certain people claiming that for Party A to receive the full complement of rights in America is somehow then to take rights away from another group? I find this an absurd proposition. And coincidentally, because we are, of course, totally unprepared, I decided to talk about this before Bill and I decided what the first segment was going to be about. And this somewhat dovetails with that. And let me give you the essence of what I'm talking about by paraphrasing a statement made by Judge Moore, Roy Moore, who is the Chief Justice of the Alabama Supreme Court. I often refer to Judge Moore as a Christian extremist. I'll explain that statement in just a moment. Judge Moore recently said in a media interview that the sexual revolution came about when the United States Supreme Court created the right of privacy, and that was when the right of Christians began to be diminished. Hence my use of the word extremist. Here is a man who takes the position that there's so much wrong with that singular sentence, I almost don't want to get into it. First, the United States Supreme Court did not create any right. Never has, never will. All courts merely acknowledge the existence of a right. So for Judge Moore to say that the United States Supreme Court, and that's a quote, he said, created, the right of privacy. Now, can you imagine living in a supposed land of liberty where the highest court in the land has repudiated that you have a right of privacy? Whoa! That would not take us to the days of the Soviet Union. That would take us into even darker days than that. Then after the false claim, this guy sits as the Chief Justice of the Alabama Supreme Court.
And yeehaw!
Yeah, and more. Boy, that 12-year-old niece of mine is looking good. So after making such an erroneous statement about the creation of a right, then he goes on to say that it was the creation of that right that began the dimming of the rights of Christians. What the hell? Now, let me give you my take on this. And I have sort of an A, part A, and a part B. The part A is that if the right of privacy was to somehow minimized, diluted the rights of Christians, then that would mean that Christians believed the Judge Roy Moore type of Christian. Let me be very clear about that. There are some fantastic, wonderful Christian people out there, and that's obviously not who I'm talking about. This is the Christian extremist view. For Judge Roy Moore's characterization to be accurate, then the extremists, such as Judge Roy Moore, must feel that they have a right to invade your privacy and tell you what to do. Because if they didn't feel that they had the prerogative to invade your privacy and control you in your private affairs, then his statement would be rendered a nonsense statement. I think it's a nonsense statement anyway, but you get my point. That absent that perception that Christian extremists have the right to interfere in areas of your life, to look into areas of your life that are quite properly private, and then tell you what to do by law, and if you disagree, lock you in a government cage. Absent that paradigm, his statement makes no sense whatsoever. So that is implicit in his statement that the right of privacy began to dim the rights of Christians. Now, that's the A part. The B part is, clearly then, it's actually a subset of A, but I want to separate it because I want it to be crystal clear. If Judge Roy Moore had his way, he would intend to right now today look into areas of our lives that are quite properly private, and he would want to control our actions in our private domain according to his worldview of what is proper or improper. Not, let's limit it for the sake of argument to your bedroom. I'm sure Judge Roy Moore would like to go everywhere, but we're just going to limit this discussion to your bedroom. I think human sexuality is probably one of the most complex aspects of that within a human being. And people do all sorts of things that all these people over here might say, whoa, that's some nutty stuff. In the bedroom, they do it because it works for themselves and their partner. Okay? Whether it be a heterosexual partner, whether it be a lifelong partner, a wife or a husband, whether it be a homosexual partner, whatever. People do things in their bedrooms that other people would look at and go, whoa, that is some freaky stuff, right? But it works for them. It's good for them. And it satisfies them sexually. And it's in the privacy of their own bedroom, and really, who gives a darn? I once had a guy saying to me, he's very anti-gay. And he was saying to me, you ever think about what they do? You ever think about, they're in the bedroom and they're together, and you ever think about what they do? And I was like, no, I don't. and here's the thing. I don't want to think about what heterosexual couples I know do, right? First of all, I could probably never imagine in a million years, other than the plain vanilla stuff that we all do. What they're into, I could probably never figure out. You know, you want to get the dog collars out and the leashes, whatever. It's your thing in the bedroom. But Judge Roy Moore would want to get behind that bedroom door and see what was going on and say, I, Judge Roy Moore, and others who feel the way I do, don't like you getting out the dog collar or the whips and the chains or the pickles and the whipped cream or whatever it is. And so we want to make that illegal. We don't like things like, say, marital aids. We don't like vibrators or dildos. So if you have those, we're going to lock you in a government cage. I think the mentality that says such a thing is dangerous and I think a bit loony. Okay? And this guy is a chief justice of a state Supreme Court in this land, which is just appalling. And to characterize your freedom to do as you see fit in your private domain as a diminution of his rights as a religious person, as a Christian, I find is an phenomenon that is new to me. Perhaps many of these people have had this point of view for a long time. Perhaps it's that the paradigm of society has shifted, so I'm seeing it more. Nevertheless, it's now crystal clear to me that the insanity of that particular type of logic, and that now they're claiming, I guess now that they don't get their way all the time anymore, that by us having our privacy, it harms their rights. Bill, what do you think about that?
It's interesting where you're going with this whole privacy thing. You know, back into the 80s and 90s, there were a number of anti-sodomy laws around the country.
Right.
Now, we're talking about ultimate privacy, what you do in your own bedroom. You know, Nevada was the first state in the entire union to repeal its anti-sodomy law.
I did not know that.
Governor Bob Miller actually signed that into law. It was in the late 80s, 86, 87, 88, something like that.
Well, with Vegas, that would make sense.
Yeah, and other states then either started to repeal those or they are inevitably all done away with by court action saying, you know, that's through someone's right
Supreme
of privacy,
Court,
you can't do that.
The U.S. Supreme Court struck down all those laws.
Right, so, yeah. And that's rights of privacy. So when we're talking about this sort of thing and Judge Roy Moore, I don't know, is it Roy, is it Leroy, Billy
yeah,
Bob
but,
Moore,
yeah.
graduated from the... Yeah, law school of Cracker Jacks with a capitalization on cracker.
Yeah.
I mean, who is this jackass?
Yeah.
So he's been on the Alabama Supreme Court for 12 years now.
Okay.
Right. That's that's when he started as Chief Justice in 2003. And to talk about the creation of a right that the Supreme Court of the United States did and how bad it is just tells us why we need to keep some people limited. We talk about the Peter principle, and he has definitely shown us that within the realm of legal, the legal field,
yeah.
as a judiciary, I guess you could call him, he is definitely Peter principled out on this one.
You know, I imagine, I'm so appalled that somebody with the insane views of Judge Roy Moore could sit on any state Supreme Court, no less be the Chief Justice. I mean, when I think about this, if I had to take some sort of a case that dealt with my privacy, for instance, through the Alabama courts all the way to the Alabama Supreme Court, the old paradigm is unless there was a federal question, you couldn't take it to the federal courts. And the 14th Amendment, to a great extent, erased that barrier. Not completely, but to a great extent. And there were many, many years I eschewed that. I'm like, oh, that's wrong. That's bad. If there's no legitimate state question or federal question, you know, the state Supreme Court should be the end of it. You shouldn't be able to take it. But then I look at guys like that and I imagine if he's the swing vote on a matter concerning my privacy, you know, I've got to say, just on a practical matter, not theoretical, but where the rubber meets the road, I'd be damn glad to be able to take that to a federal judge who isn't a religious extremist, a zealot, and say, can we unwind this craziness? Because I shouldn't have to be judged by that.
You know, when it comes down to it, throughout history we had, you know, we can't let the blacks do anything. We can't let the women do anything. We can't let the Jews do anything. We can't let, you know, the Muslims, we can't let anybody do anything because that's going to just destroy humankind as we're not destroyed yet.
No.
Get with it.
Yeah. It's a constant plea that if you do that, it's going to be the end of America. And then 50 years later, America's fine.
It's on to the next thing. That was fine. We were wrong back then, but now it's a new thing.
And we'll be back right after these words.
Time for me to rant. You know what really grinds my gears? Firearms training organizations that pull some sort of a stunt, like limiting civilians, citizens, from going through certain training courses because they're only for law enforcement or military. That really grinds my gears. And let me tell you why. Read through all of our founding documents and you'll realize the Constitution was written as something to protect liberties and freedoms of the individual citizens and all of us from an overbearing government, and to give 17 very specific enumerated authorities to the federal government. That's what it did. So you end up with we the people as the masters, the government people as the servants. When you put together anything, any sort of a course or anything such as that, which is limited, and we're talking not a government agency that limits it, we're talking about a private organization, a private business, corporation, or individual that puts on any sort of training or seminar or information, which is only available to if you're a cop or you're part of the military, then you can come in. Everybody else, we close the door. So literally, what they're doing is allowing the servants to take this course, but the masters are not allowed. Could you imagine if you owned your own business or even owned your own mansion, if you will, and you've got people that work for you and keep the grounds at this mansion, and there's an area which you as the owner, it's off limits. You can't go in there. You can't have access. We will not allow you. Only those groundskeepers and folks that clean up in the house or the chefs or the butlers or anything, only the servants can access this part of the house and do certain things in there. But you as the owner cannot. Really? This is the problem that I've got. Just yesterday, I sent an email to a new company. New company. They were just formed earlier this year in 2015. They based themselves out of Phoenix, Arizona. And I raised this question because they had several courses available only to military and law enforcement. And what they came back to me with was, well, you know, military has different rules of engagement than citizens or law enforcement, and law enforcement has different rules of engagement than citizens or military. And when there's different courses that we teach, like overwatch of, say, a major sporting event, or how to do a buy of a stolen car, a clandestine buy of a stolen car. You know, that's not really the realm for the citizens. Something tells me that as a firearms training organization, you're not teaching any of those classes. And even if you are, who are you to tell me that if I have the prerequisites, I can't then attend and see what my servants are doing? And I think that's really the big thing, Dave.
Oh, dude, I've long objected to this, and I've written some emails over the years to firearms training companies that have had this sort of policy. And really what they're saying, and the response that you received in your case validates this, what they're really saying is, and just like the response you got, it starts out, rah, rah, cheer the Second Amendment, yeah, love America, it's all this patriotic crap. And then you get to their answer, and their answer, no matter how eloquently phrased, distills down to, we simply do not trust our fellow citizens to receive this information. Only a certain special group are we comfortable giving this information to.
Oh, yeah. The protectors.
Yes.
The people you should trust.
Yeah. For instance, one of the elements of one of the courses in the one you wrote to was overwatch of a sporting event. And what this deals with is precision rifle shooters in law enforcement military would be snipers, having the ability to watch a crowd and be looking for indicators of a threat and potentially removing that threat from their position of concealment. Okay. Most Americans are not aware, for instance, when they go to an NFL game, there are multiple snipers secreted around in that facility, and they're completely invisible, and the attendees never even know that there are armed men sitting behind rifles in concealed locations throughout the stadium, usually a minimum of two at every NFL game. Now, I would probably, that would not be a course that would be high on my list of attendance. There are things I would rather do. However, if I had taken some of these other courses that I was more interested in, because sometimes the instructor, always the student, right? If I decided, okay, you know, that was not top of my list, but I've worked my way down. I'm ready for that one now. It's not super high on my interest list, but I'm interested in everything when it deals with tactics and firearms and strategies. And all right, so I'm going to go take this course. No, you can't. I can't. The fact that I'm not doing it for a living and the fact that I may never actually employ the skills that I was taught, why should that stop me from giving that school my money and being one more person at that class? To me, the only justification that the school could possibly have for saying, no, I'm sorry, Mr. Champion, you can't attend, is that the American people are, in the minds of that school owner, a non-trustworthy group that sort of information must be kept from.
You know, I have been in this scenario as a civilian, if you will, that is in a class and there's a bunch of cops that are part of the class. Mm-hmm. And you can tell that they feel uncomfortable. I took a three-day class with a friend of mine. You know him too. He's from California. It's about 3 years ago. He comes, picks me up. We drive up into Utah. And the first 2 days, it was just a bunch of civilians in there shooting. The third day, the local SWAT team came out. And the SWAT team was made up of regular officers that are on call out for SWAT. It's not the special full-time team, like in a lot of smaller towns. And they came out to train. Of course, they just huddled around each other, didn't want to have anything to do with the citizens, the civilians, if you will, until they saw that some of us were just spanking them on the range, absolutely annihilating their abilities. And as a sometimes instructor, I knew the guy that he wasn't in charge of the SWAT team. He was the training supervisor of the SWAT team, however. He wasn't the sergeant in charge. But, you know, he and I started chatting, gave me a thumbs up to start working with this guy. So after they had an opportunity to see what we're able to do, I'm able to help some of these guys out and help tune them up. And so obviously there's some resistance, and I know this from having worked in the field. Sometimes cops want to just train with cops.
Yeah.
Or military wants to train just with military. You know, that's their mission-specific thing. But to specifically say, I'm going to form a class and only you guys can sign up for it is different than, we want this class, or you go to them, look, we offer this course, we'll come to you. We're not going to put it on our schedule.
Right.
If you guys want a mission-specific course, we can provide it. We're not going to put it up and then say, by the way, we exclude all of you from being able to come in. That's garbage.
I agree wholeheartedly. I used to do a lot of training when I lived in California. After I left law enforcement, I used to do a lot of training with law enforcement. I was well known. I'd been in the firearms training venue in law enforcement. So I knew all of the fellow trainers from mid-California all the way down to the Mexican border, well, most of them down to the Mexican border. And I would attend a lot of these courses even after I left law enforcement. You know how that goes. You know, oh, yeah, we know, Dave. Yeah, you can come. But if I had just been some guy, even though the courses were nothing spectacular, there was nothing cop specific. Okay. There was nothing, you know, really sneaky and stinky. The civilians can't know. Nothing like that. But nevertheless, had I just been some guy off the street, I would not have been welcome. And you're right when you talk about, you know, getting spanked on the range. Emergency response rear. You're familiar with that, right? There was an agency, a municipal police department in the Palm Springs area. I can't remember which municipality it was. It was not the city of Palm Springs, but in that Coachella Valley area. Their SWAT team, their standard for successfully having demonstrated that they could do emergency response rear, 6 seconds.
What? Gunfight's over in half that time.
I kid you not.
6 seconds.
If they could perform emergency response rear within 6 seconds, they met the standard on a SWAT team.
I think you could do that with a donut in your hand.
Yeah.
Maybe they did.
I think my timing on an emergency response rear is like, what, 1.1 seconds, something like that?
You know, I have found a huge misnomer with people who just don't know. Talk about, you know, and it's usually anti-gunners and anti-gun politicians that like to say this, well, you know, police and military are trained to such a high standard that they should. When you look at the actual standard of training that most cops and military get, it is so low. And I equate it to football, because people can tend to understand this. It's about a junior varsity high school level is what that's the industry standard for most police and military. Not realizing even that there's a varsity level, there's junior college, several levels of college, and then several levels of pro up to and including the NFL. And a lot of them who are actually the trainers for police and the trainers for military don't even realize that that's there.
Yeah.
And if you don't specifically seek that extra level of training out, you could find yourself against a Division I college ball player or professional ball player when you're still a junior varsity high school player, and it ain't going to work out well.
You know Gabe Suarez?
I do.
Fellow trainer.
Yes.
And he phrased it very succinctly. It was the first time that I'd heard it put just this way. And it's nothing sex or anything, but he did it very succinctly. He said, firearms and tactics training, the horsepower's in the private sector. That sentence, and I was like, yeah. And as you point out, the disconnect for people who are in law enforcement and military is they don't even realize that that statement exists, no less that that statement is true.
Basically, the firearms and tactics levels of the average cop out there, what is actually achievable, what's actually out there, it's a position of complete, total, and utter ignorance. They don't even know. And if you talk to them about, you know, going to one of these schools to do it, I already got that. No, you didn't.
Back around 2000, with another ex-law enforcement officer, we were actually going to build a company and put on a course. You can take it all throughout California, teaching patrol officers how to make a weapon safe. Because there were so many incidents where they did not know how to correctly do it.
I had an old TAC officer that went back on patrol and ended up shooting herself and her trainee trying to clear a gun. Ridiculous. We'll be right back.
And we are back. Segment 4, where we talk about the things that you want to talk about by you sending us emails to this. There it is, that address right there. You can get us on totallyunprepared.info.
Correct.
And, of course, we have the Facebook presence as well, if you're a Facebook person. And Bill and I are going to talk about an email that came in. But before, I wanted to, while Bill was doing his rant, I was actually checking some news stories. And coincidentally, since we had just been talking about some of these religious extremists, there's a story just happened this past Sunday down in Kentucky at a Pentecostal worship service. You know, down south, they do this thing with the snakes. And a guy got bit by a rattlesnake. And he refused medical treatment because, you know, why?
Oh, God will take care of him.
The Lord will save me. 4 hours later, he dropped dead from the poison of the snake. So, just sort of the Judge Roy Moore kind of cat.
Lovely.
Now, tell me about the email. What are we going to talk about?
Well, it's about gun control being masked as crime control. We don't want to see these mass shootings, so we want to pass these laws to stop these crimes. Now, in the last 3 or 4 years, we've had several mass shootings by people who went to a gun store and bought a gun legally, passed all the background checks, did the Form 4473 and all this stuff, and they lawfully own their guns, right? Bought them from a retailer, did the whole thing. They went out and they did their mass shooting. So they're trying to find other ways to prevent these. However, they mask it as crime control, not gun control.
Yeah,
so we need, you know, the crime is being committed with a gun. So what we end up with now is the realization there's been several mass stabbings that have not made the news.
Oh, right, right.
So there's a lot of people dying by the blade of a knife. Some kid just recently, killed he and somebody else in the family killed mom, dad, two other brothers, a sister, and tried another sister, but the sister was wounded, but not...
She survived.
Yeah, she survived. And she said...
So five dead.
Five dead, sixth attempt. And she said, yeah, he went nuts and started stabbing all of us. So we're not looking for knife control.
Right.
Where's the crime control there? It's not. It's.
I'm going to guess 99% of our audience did not know that happened.
Anything about this. Yes. And this happened last week.
Right.
No, last week.
No.
A week ago today, they were all alive.
No mass media...
Nothing at all.
Nothing.
And if I remember, I believe it was in Oklahoma is where this took place. So the thing is they're obviously...
the religious extremists.
cut the head off snakes and, I killed my family members. So what it ends up with, Dave, is obviously we know that it's not crime control when it comes to guns. It's gun control. And gun control has nothing to do with guns. It has everything to do with control. So remember that.
Yeah, and this is not a rarity either. Typically, when there are these cases where there are mass murders, which the FBI defines as three or more people killed in a single incident by a single killer, when they happen and they involve an edged weapon rather than a firearm, we don't hear anything about them. Now, if you have a mass shooting in Perth, Australia, we're going to hear about it on MSNBC. Okay? If you have a mass slaughter with an edged weapon in Tibet, we're never going to hear about it.
Seriously, a mass slaughter in Tibet? People are very peaceful.
That
might make the news.
There is a huge Tibet resistance against China, against Chinese political control in Tibet.
Occupation, if you will.
And there was actually a case in China, very few people are aware of it. I'm going to guess this goes back about 8 or 9 months ago. Several guys walked onto a train platform, like the subway, walked on with machetes and hacked dozens of people to death. And I found the story on like page 47 of some news site, right? It was barely touched by the dominant media in this country.
Okay, so let's open this up. If there's a mass stabbing or macheting going on, how do you stop them? Exactly. It's not going to be with a pocket knife or a machete or even a longer sword, a katana or a samurai sword.
Right.
No, it's going to be with a gun, especially when you've got multiple assailants. And how did those guys know? How did the victims on the train platform know?
Unless you're that gal from Kill Bill, then you could take them out with
maybe
your katana.
Maybe Uma Thurman, yes.
Yeah, there you go.
Now, if you're on this train platform and you know this is coming, what are you going to do? Well, to use a term, you're going to un-ass out of there, and you're not going to be there for this, right? You're just going to avoid the situation. But if you don't know what's going to happen, and it does, what are your options? Be a victim or to not be a victim?
Right.
And the only way that you're going to prevent being a victim there is if you're able to stop them. And the only way to stop them in that case, effectively, immediately, efficiently get it done, is with a gun. So you would have these different organizations, people, groups, politicians that would say, we need to take guns away from everybody. You know what? That's then going to turn into the biggest, baddest, physically most overpowering person, if they can't grab a weapon, is going to dominate you.
And
the small, weak people are going to be victims their entire lives.
And what you said has happened every single place that they've taken away guns from the public. Australia, after they invoked their nationwide gun control, home invasion robberies up 64%. I have a friend who lives up in Canada, and she, I think she and her husband are divorced now, but a few years back when she was sharing me with this, the neighborhood, she and her husband are both very, very well-to-do business professionals, and they live in a very upscale neighborhood, and she said that the biggest crime issue in her neighborhood was home invasion robberies. So whenever you take away these tools from the citizenry, you end up with, you know, how is the homeowner, even if there's, say, two homeowners, you know, how are they going to defend themselves against six?
Did you say homeowner?
No.
Homeowner?
Homeowners. There you go. How are they going to defend themselves against 5 or 6 guys, 6'4", 280 pounds, who are violent and employ violence day in and day out as their way of life?
If you ask British Parliament, it's to submit and allow them to do whatever they want, and then have the police take a report later and have your insurance company take care of things.
Yeah.
And if you take a couple of bruises, broken bones maybe, you'll heal.
Yeah.
No rights to self-protection in England whatsoever.
Right. And your property. And, you know, this is one of the things. It was California Chief Justice Rose Byrd back in the day said no man's life is worth a TV. And at the time, I owned a law enforcement supply company, and it was also a firearms training company. And we had T-shirts made up, and it said at the top, it said, no man's life is worth a TV, Judge Rose Byrd. And then it said, then don't steal mine, Pro Arms International.
Perfect.
And people don't understand that to steal property is to steal the most valuable thing you have. And that is the moments, hours, weeks, months that you have on this planet. Let me explain that statement. The average person, let's say they go out and they buy a $2,000 big screen TV, and some thugs steal it. I don't know, let's just for the sake of simplicity say I already said it was a $2,000 TV. The person had to work X amount of days, weeks, to acquire the money to buy that. It's now gone, which means all that time is lost and can never be made up. Then the person, if they want to have it back again and they weren't insured, they have to go back and they have to work those days or weeks again to replace what those guys stole. I think every single thinking human being knows the only thing we can never replace ever is the time we have on this earth.
Yep.
And to steal a man's property is to steal, because he had to invest his time, is to take the time that he has on this earth away from him. And I think that's one of the reasons that I find violent theft so egregious, is that it is stealing that most valuable thing we have. It's not just a matter of property like Judge Rose Byrd would have had people believe.
You know, we go back to the idea of everybody being unarmed, and then the big and powerful will squash the little. It's that old phrase that they had that said, God created man, Sam Colt made them equal. And what does that mean? That means that a handgun is deployable by virtually anyone.
Sure.
And that neutralizes the physical overbearing power that someone might have over their intended victim. And if you go, you can go online, folks, go online, look it up on YouTube. There's all kinds of things that you can look up, which are documentaries that people have gone and done and interviewed criminals who are behind bars in penitentiaries and ask, what is the one thing that you are most afraid of when you commit your crimes? And it's virtually all the same.
Yeah, they never say
armed
the courts.
Citizens.
Yeah, they never say the courts. They never say the cops.
No, they don't say, well, you know, those gun control laws really put us out of business. No, they like gun control. The thing that they fear most is a citizen with a gun, their intended victim, shooting them and potentially killing them. That's what they fear most. If everyone were armed and trained and knew how to use their gun, that would eliminate the vast majority of criminals, because they know my career is going to be cut very short very soon.
And we see that in these videos now that we live in the video age. We see that in these videos all the time. For instance, I was just watching one the other day. Some guys were trying to break into a store. I don't know what kind of store, but it had the gates across the front. And they were backing some vehicle into the gates to smash the gates down. And they were going to come in and then steal everything, throw it in the car and go. they didn't know the owner was still in the store, even though the gates were closed and the lights were down. He was there. So they bash the gates, and one of the criminals comes over to grab the gate and slide it back. And this guy comes up with an AR. Pap, 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 pap. He starts, unfortunately, he was doing the spray and pray thing. He should have waited about another 3 or 4 seconds and then used his sights. 3 or 4 seconds for the guy to become more obvious and then used his sights. But the bottom line is, to validate your point, the minute he opened up, these guys took off. This is one guy, probably not Rambo, store owner, here's professional thieves, obviously, right, committing a violent felony. And the minute he presses the trigger, they're gone.
Yeah, if these felons ended up dropping like flies because armed people were there in order to stop them legally, lawfully,
yes,
they started dropping like flies, people would start picking different career choices. Yep. There'd be far less criminals out there and far less repeat offenders. I'm not advocating murder, but I'm talking about protecting yourself and your stuff and your family.
If the guy's violent, take him down.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
We'll be back next week.